Hi. Thank you for joining us at U Inc. My name is Rhea Greif, and I'm here with you today, as I am every week, to help build the most important brand in your life, which is you. When we talk about building, we use tools, and the same goes for building our brand. These wellness tools will help elevate your emotional intelligence and help to lead you in a more positive-minded outlook and successful direction in life and in business. Some of these tools you will find helpful today, and some you'll put in your back pocket for another time, depending on when you'll need to pull it out. This week's tool is fear, and why it is important to examine your fears in order to face them and to be able to handle them effectively and creatively. Being able to harness your fears is what I will demonstrate to you, and being able to do so is a great tool for your brand. I'm afraid of Americans. First, the buy-in. Okay, we all have fears. They're natural. Actually, they're more natural, and they have been designed to save our lives throughout the course of our more than 200,000 years on this planet when modern humans first arrived, give or take 1,000 years. And here we are. But what we are encountering today is a bastardization of fear in contemporary society. And what our goal is today on U Inc. is to understand that true fear is a gift, unwarranted fear is a curse, and to learn how to tell the difference. Let's start with true fear and the gift that it is. There are two arenas in which true fear can be used as a gift for our brand. One way is in which it keeps us safe. A great book in reclaiming your true fear, in other words, developing our instinct, is The Gift of Fear by Gavin DeBecker. Oprah Winfrey touts him as the foremost expert on violent behavior, and in his book, he shows you how to spot even the subtle signs of danger before it's too late. In this book, which, by the way, can be found on our website at wcbe.org, along with our complete podcast as well as links to our articles and references to the books that we discuss on our program can be found. So in this book, we are encouraged to harness our instincts, which, and I quote, is in fact a cognitive process faster than we recognize and far different from the familiar step-by-step thinking we rely on so willingly. We think conscious thought is better, when in fact intuition is a soaring flight compared to the plodding of logic. Nature's greatest accomplishment, the human brain, is never more efficient or invested than when its host is at risk. Think about it. If our body dies, it can no longer keep the brain alive. So there is a deep relationship between the body and the brain. As a result, there is this amazing interdependence. And there are many tools that we can use to assist us in heeding our instincts, such as being aware of too many details from a person. That's an indication that they're lying. To explicitly rebuff unwarranted approaches is a recommendation given to women. To be wary of the charm and overt niceness, which is actually a way of compelling and controlling people. Rejecting the notions of we, such as people putting us in the same predicament as them, and then we feel obligated to help. Being insulted, and then we have to prove that we are not that, to the point of our own detriment. Or hearing the word, I promise. These are ways that con artists gnaw away at our fears and trick us into not using our intuition. Another way to harness our fear is to utilize it the way athletes use it. When I started to do the research on this topic, I hadn't really thought about fear. My thoughts on fear have always been what most athletes will tell you. They don't feel fear, or if they do, they accept it. But mostly when you hear Olympians talk after their event, they say they felt excited. And in fact, I did find a handy definition of fear that echoes this sentiment in the graffiti of a bathroom stall of an arcade. So fear is feeling excited and ready. Most athletes and leaders know that most fears are irrational. And there is a great article in Lifehack that is also on our website that you can check out to see how to overcome them. But understand that most of your fears won't happen, but realizing that allows you to overcome them. So develop an awareness. Remember, I always say, when you bring something into where your awareness, you have the ability to make choices around that. Okay, that allows us to drive ourselves harder. Fear can paralyze or motivate. Carol Dweck, writing one of my all-time favorite books, Mindset, suggests that most successful people among us foster a growth mindset. They don't think of their abilities as fixed, but rather as flexible. When faced with a setback, they try harder rather than succumbing to fear of another failure. They adopt a new strategy. They keep seeking a solution instead of cowering in fear. Often the circumstances don't determine your fate. Your mindset determines your fate. And if you have a growth mindset, you can use fear to your advantage, just like athletes, leaders, entrepreneurs, children, and winners. And next and finally, let's move to our unwarranted fears. We are riddled with irrational fears. This is the safest time in human history. So why are we all afraid? In short, fear-mongers and the news outlets that extend their reach are to blame. We're so often taught to be afraid of things and people that pose very little risk to us that there's so little discussion of issues that are actually harmful to us. We are more vulnerable to job insecurity, housing value drops, what is being shoveled into our mouths that's being called food, the brainwashing of beauty ideals that leads to image issues, all being bombarded by the media, politicians, or your garden variety political wingnut is what most middle-class Americans are at risk of. And if we feared the right things, we would take corrective or preventative action, such as watching what we eat, not falling victim to fake news, not watching TV, obtaining a diverse skill set to make ourselves more marketable, making sure we are cognizant of interest rates, not falling victims to internet scams and Ponzi schemes, some might even say religion. Moreover, we have been instead led on to fear the wrong things. And in the book, The Culture of Fear, Why Americans Are Afraid of the Wrong Things by Barry Glassner makes an irrefutable case as to how this happens and how it is absolutely the wrong stuff to be afraid of. Things like dangers on the roadway, campuses, the overstated statistics in the news about crime, at-risk youth, black men, the fear-based messages of politicians to win elections, and plane crashes, to name a few. So, a cautionary tale essentially is to use science, research, peer-reviewed articles, ostensibly to use critical thinking, which will be another Ewing tool in one of our future programs. In other words, don't swallow the blue pill. Don't believe the hype. A champion is afraid of losing. Everyone else is afraid of winning. And that is a quote from Billie Jean King. Don't believe the hype. Don't believe the hype. Don't believe the hype. Our guest, David Alm, writer of the infamous Gifting Rug, is the founder of Civic Hacks, a self-described impact engineer and a social connector. He created Startup Storytellers, an annual gathering of the entrepreneurial community to share authentic stories about the challenges of being a leader and meaningfully connect with those on a similar path. In his early career, he navigated through local government and then national, managing political campaigns and then writing speeches for the lately deceased Senator Voinovich. He then began pioneering social media and politics. Then Mr. All shifted his agency, the David All Group, to focus on consumer brands, some of which are Intel, Google, and Burning Man. Shortly after, he felt that this was not fulfilling his purpose. And when President Obama called June 1st to the 2nd of that year as the National Day of Civic Hacking, Mr. All responded immediately, creating Civic Hacks. Mr. All felt that he was not fulfilling his purpose with this for-profit business, and he formed Well HQ out of a sense of responsibility to the medical community. And he was asked by the former CEO of NHI Inc., Charles Wheeler, to assist him to solve the problem of clinical management of chemical dependency and the exceptional treatment of opioid addicts. Mr. All says, and I quote, that his aim is to impact 1 billion lives. So today we have David All with us, and hopefully he can add all of our listeners into the number of impacted lives. Welcome, David All.
Thanks for having me.
So, David, in your bio, I read, that you were an impact catalyst or an impact engineer since the age of two. Now, I want to know, what did a two-year-old David do that I, at the age of 45, cannot even call myself that? What did you do?
Well, you know, it was take your kid to work day. Mm-hmm. And that was an opportunity for me to explore. And I found the lunchroom. And I found a guy there. I found what would ultimately become my stepdad. And as my mom turned the corner, she saw me smashing food all over this my late stepdad's face. And that was, you know, the beginning of me connecting people. And it hasn't ever stopped.
So they were not married at the time?
They were not married at the time.
Okay. Totally get it. So one of the things that I learned about you when I listened to your Civic Hacks interview, which was very motivating, was one of the times, one of the things that you discussed was a time that you lost your business. And in fact, you mentioned it to me when we met as well. When we talk about fear, did you feel fear during that time?
When I lost my business? Mm-hmm. I didn't feel fear as much as I felt pain.
Mm-hmm.
I felt a situation that was so far out of my control that I had to stay in, that it was much different than fear. Mm-hmm. It wasn't a prevention. I feel like fear is something that would prevent you from going into the dark forest, right? Mm-hmm. Because you don't feel, your instincts are telling you not to go in. This was just getting hammered by so many emotions and situations that were out of my control.
And that was the second part of my question. So we talked about fear, like you said, keeping us from going to dark forest, keeping us from getting mugged. Do you think maybe you missed some of those signals that fear was trying to tell you in order for you to prevent this from happening to you?
Absolutely.
Okay.
I think part of that was geography. So being away from the core of my business was based in Washington, D.C., and I had moved to San Francisco to pursue working with these other consumer brands in Silicon Valley. And we're obviously very successful at that, but at the same time, I lost control on what was happening in Washington, D.C.
You also mentioned during the time that you were talking about that time period in your life that you had met the love of your life and you had lost that as well. And this was at Burning Man where you had met an experience which I recommend to everyone having gone myself this year. Having had losses now, did that make you fear connecting with humanity or trusting people?
Yeah, it's been a long road back, particularly in business.
Mm-hmm.
It's taken trusting people again, from just people I meet off the street to people I want to help to new girlfriends, mm-hmm, to business partners and everything in between. But that's not a bad thing. I had to relearn who I was inside and how affected I was inside. And I get influenced by people. I'm a pure extrovert and I feel their energies. I sometimes consider myself like a tuning fork of sorts.
An empath.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm very intuitive.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was really trying to just hone those skills for a while. And at the same time, I was dealing with some other issues that I'm sure we're going to get into.
So what are some of your recommendations towards people to kind of get back to let that fear go and to learn to trust again? What are some things that David Hall did?
So what I had to do was understand that I'm a vulnerable leader. I don't mind being vulnerable with my story. The hardest moments of my life I see as a part of the journey. I do a lot of storytelling. I look at things like the hero's journey. I know my path is one of doing amazing things in the world. And I look back at those moments, even today, those hardest moments, the crucible of my life,
mm-hmm,
as being the moment that I became a social entrepreneur, that I found a vision that's far greater than anything that would be related to money or something, mm-hmm, silly like that. The advice I would give to people is to begin taking steps into that forest and lower yourself into the well as I did and start marching back and forth to understand grief and how valuable that can be to you, mm-hmm, if you're going through a difficult time, and to take on your fears, whatever they may be, because once you're through it once, you don't have the fear ever again, mm-hmm, or at least not at that same level.
So adopting that new mindset.
Absolutely.
Right. So we live in very interesting times when it comes to social media and its influence on politics. And, you know, you were a political speechwriter. How much does fear actually play a role in galvanizing people and you know, in terms of social media outlets and speeches today. What are your thoughts on that?
It's why I left politics ultimately, because I could see that the tool I had created in politics, it was actually on David Cameron's race over in the UK. I'd created a really powerful piece of technology that gamified the distribution of news. I don't know if it was false or not, but it was just about his opponent, and it was pretty damaging, and people would get points for doing that, and unbelievable the stuff, how it took off. And that was really an eye-opener for me to say, wait a second, I don't want these tools to be used by the wrong people, and I can't create them ever again because of that reason.
We can basically blame you for all of this.
I don't.
Just kidding. So is there a way that people can kind of catch that, like, okay, I'm operating on fear. I'm allowing this to influence me. How can people check themselves?
Yeah, so that's a great question. I love surfing, and I'm not that great at it. But what I love about surfing is that it scares the hell out of me.
Not surfing the net.
No, okay, surfing on a surfboard.
Okay.
You know, so when you're out there, you know, a little 2 foot, 3 foot wave. I mean, I'm sure most people say, oh, whatever. But when I was out there and I'd see a 4 foot wave or something, that thing would scare me. And yet I would try. And I would get, you know, spun up in the waves and I would fall over and, you know, all of these things. But I love to summon courage. So if you start to think of fear as the other side of that, which is courage, then start getting courage points. So anytime you get an opportunity to earn some more points in the courage bucket, I go for it. Because I'm at a point now where I don't have fear about anything, really. I mean, walking up and down the street at night or something, maybe, if it's in a bad area.
So when people are told you need to fear this particular group of people or you need to fear this happening to your jobs, that they should be courageous enough to really kind of explore that, look at the research, check out peer-reviewed journals and say to themselves, I'm better than that. I can look through that, go past that 4 foot wave, basically.
Absolutely. I mean, one of the things I had the honor of doing over this past year was working in the neighborhood house in the King Lincoln District, which is the historically black neighborhood of Columbus. And as a white male who grew up in Upper Arlington, it was extremely hard for both me and my colleagues. But we got through it together. That didn't mean there wasn't friction. The friction actually turned out to be the breakthrough. And we were able to say, yeah, there's fear around one or the other or whatever, but why is that? And then we were able to push right through that episode.
The crucible.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right. It's a very great point. So you're very open about your diagnosis of bipolar disorder and the fact that you were hospitalized. And you talk about the fear around mental illness, and I'm a mental health professional as part of my background, and there's a lot of stigma involved. And for those who are suffering from mental illness, who are afraid to share or afraid that, you know, people will say, you're oversharing, I don't want to hear about it, I don't want to deal with it. What are some of the recommendations that you might have for them to overcome that fear towards sharing that and being open about that and not hiding in the shadows?
Yeah. Wow. That's a great question. I created a stigma meter for myself to sort of see where all of these different mental illnesses kind of hit that stigma meter in society. And bipolar is kind of that, the one that's right on the edge. It's like you could talk about a little bit. And then right on the other side of that, right, is personality disorders and schizophrenia and some of these more severe mental illnesses. But I have found through my experience with bipolar disorder, I've never had a depressive episode. So I've only had a manic episode. And for me, it's really been a interesting, really. The way it affected my brain was it kind of opened up new caverns of thought and is very spiritual and very enlightening would be a word I would use, and creative. And that's an experience I want to tell people. But when I was telling people who had no sort of this is the first time they'd ever heard a bipolar episode, they were like, oh my gosh, wow. You know, and like all of these things that make me feel weird and make me feel scared about it. And So what I've been doing is giving people, because I told my story, well, so many other people are telling me their story now, and or their brother or whatever. And it turns out that a lot of people are dealing with some serious issues. And to be perfectly honest, there's not a lot happening for mental illness. You know, it's not like, you know, no one here is doing a Pelotonia to work on bipolar right. disorder. So I think that we sometimes our society is happy saying that something physical and biological is in fact an illness and a disease. But when it comes to things like addiction, mm-hmm. we're just, no, forget it. That was a choice.
Right.
And we're quick to just stigmatize people because they have no understanding of what that looks like.
Right. So that sounds like another project of yours. You can create a Pelotonia for mental health challenges. But also basically for those of us out there who are listening, who have mental health illnesses, overall your experience, though you face some of those reactions, overall your experience has been welcoming and positive?
Yeah, absolutely. People are open to hearing a story. Mm-hmm. I think sometimes people are afraid to tell a story, so they try to share information. Information is way different than giving people the emotions and the vulnerability that a story takes on. And there are certainly groups out there for folks. That's one way. But I've found folks with schizophrenia, for example, my heart pours out to them. And I want to hear as many of those stories as I can. We have to find a better solution yep. than just giving people so much drugs mm-hmm. that it shuts off their brain.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I agree. So some of the books that we mentioned today here on UInc, we talk about exposing people and organizations that manipulate our perceptions and profit from our fears, including advocacy groups that raise money by exaggerating the prevalence of particular diseases and politicians who win elections by heightening the concerns about crime, drug use, and terrorism. So let's turn to your organization that we talked about in your bio, Well HQ, which is about tackling the heroin epidemic. What do you say about folks who are afraid to look at this as a problem that we need to consider and do something about?
Well, it's a disaster right now. I mean, I was just at Ohio State where we're working with many researchers on a project that we started called Recovery Deserts to identify the treatment and recovery access deserts in Franklin County. Because we're not able to say they're everywhere, but we believe that they are. Mm-hmm. And we believe that overdoses and deaths are going to relate directly to not having access to treatment.
And where can some people get some of that help that your organization offers? Can you direct us to where we could go?
Yeah. So if you want to learn more about Well HQ or be involved with these projects, you can check out wellhq.com and get in touch with us there. But if you need help, go to the Franklin County Public Health or the Columbus Public Health website, and they have a list of resources.
Right. So you are, in fact, saying that this is a real big epidemic right now. I know the emergency services are carrying Narcan, the shot to help people from dying of an overdose. I also know that this is probably a side effect of the pain medications that were doled out very easily. So we have a lot of people don't have access to those drugs anymore. And I'm completely in agreement with you that this is a problem. We all really need to be a part of helping combat it.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, I'm really blessed to be in a position where I can talk to a lot of people about this challenge. The Bureau of Workers' Comp, for example, most folks who go on workers' comp payments, right, because mm-hmm. They have to leave work, it's due to some sort of injury or pain, et cetera. They're mm-hmm. prescribed an opioid painkiller, pain pill, but then they become addicted. Mm-hmm. And so now BWC is saying, hold on a second, there's something we can do. Mm-hmm. So just in the past month or two, they've actually passed a rule allowing for addiction recovery treatment for workers. And their main outcome, the goal that they're going mm-hmm. for, is to get workers back to work yep. as quickly as possible.
Right.
So, and they don't want to see them hit the streets.
Right.
But exactly. That's what's happening.
Right.
Yeah, Ohio has the number one rate number one in deaths for overdoses in the country.
Wow.
That's ridiculous.
It is. So speaking of the heroin epidemic, why are people afraid to seek treatment? Do you think it's about that stigma? What is it? You just mentioned the Bureau of Workers' Compensation has now said, you know, we're just going to treat you like any other disease, any other type of problem. We want to get you back to work. What still keeps people from seeking treatment?
I think it's a lot of things. I think there's definitely a stigma around addiction.
Mm-hmm.
Folks who are taking pills don't feel like it's that bad mm-hmm. yet. So they don't even think that they have an addiction. And I think that we don't have enough treatment options for folks. It's too difficult a system to navigate. I mean, the continuum is like 6 or 7 steps long, and it's 5 to 10 years or forever in length. This is not something that just you get over.
Mm.
And of course, there are the insurance problems. And fortunately, we have a funded Adam H., which is the Alcohol, Drug, and Mental Health Board, which is a levy here in Franklin County, which fortunately our voters support. But that's not happening all throughout Ohio.
Mm-hmm.
This is county by county. So, I mean, this is like the worst things are happening.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't have the infrastructure that is up to speed.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really where we come into play. We bring our vision and our ability to seek efficiencies in a system, and we're looking to help fill the gaps. So instead of building the next big hospital, we're going to utilize this recovery deserts map to say, well, this specific piece is here. Detox is needed in this area, and that will help save X amount of lives. And then over here and on the east side, we need to have more aftercare options, mm-hmm. alternatives to NA meetings and the sort.
So basically making an analysis and seeing what exactly the different services that are required in those different areas.
Absolutely. Throughout the state.
Right. Tailoring that. What is the great fear behind people letting go of their addiction, particularly to heroin? It just seems like one of those addictions that's just so hard. People don't want to let it go. What's that fear about?
Well, soothing is all about that wound we
mm-hmm.
carry.
Mm-hmm.
And people soothe with alcohol, with food, with sex, with stealing, with drugs, with infidelity. You name it. This is the source is a wound. And unfortunately, in the treatment world, what we see all over the place is people just doing like a replacement therapy where they're giving them one drug and instead of another.
Mm-hmm.
Methadone is a great example of that. And they're not going after the source, which is the wound.
And you have to deal with that pain because it's going to continue that source of fear because you don't want to feel it. Because it hurts so much.
Absolutely.
I want to thank you, and I hope that you have impacted everyone that who's been listening today, because I know that I've been impacted. Thank you.
Wow, thank you so much. I'm very grateful.
Oh, wonderful. And now a word from our person on the street. Okay, so tell me, Papu George, what are your thoughts on fear?
The only thing that I'm afraid in life is the dentist and women.
Okay, we'll start with dentist. Why are you afraid of the dentist?
Pain, too much pain. I'm afraid of the shots that they give you.
Okay.
That's the only thing, not the actual work, just the shots. It just gives me the goosebumps.
Okay, now what about women?
Women are the strongest species of the two. They control the world. That's why Earth is called Mother Earth, not Father Earth. So they will get their way no matter which way you turn them. So I'm afraid of them because I cannot beat them.
But you're talking about a woman gave birth to you. You're afraid of your mom?
Absolutely. Yes, I am.
But it's a good thing, right?
It is a good thing because, like I said, without them, there will be no life. It is a good thing.
Other than that, no fears at all?
No fears at all.
Okay, thank you.
You're quite welcome.
And that's our show for today, folks. Thanks so much for joining me. I'm Maria Greif, and you've been listening to U Inc. on 90.5 WCBE.